The Mora, the Asra Shlita, really needs no introduction. However, I would like to bring out one Nakuda. Rabbi Lankri always has a tremendous simcha when he hears that from the Chevrei, from the night coil, learning a certain Mektsaya, learned the Mektsaya ad Allah Chalamaisa. From the different Mektsayas, we learned Taloyim, we had those that became experts in the field, and we all know Rabbi Lankri really is happy when somebody learns the Halacha and becomes a profession in that Halacha. I'm sure and certain that you'll be happy to hear that there are those over here that after learning almost 3 months in Hilchas Mila, Torah, Shulchan Aruch, Halacha Lamaisa, want to take it ad Halacha Lamaisa into the practical becoming a Moel. Rabbi Lankri is a Noah Doirish Noah Makayim. This goes back a while back in Beis Eliyahu in Lakewood, learning Hilchas Shechita. So you learn Hilchas Shechita, you have to be able to bring it ad Halacha Lamaisa. He brought chickens, he brought sheep, you know, to be able to shech. Me, on a personal note as well, I have the Shechia many times to speak and get Hadracha from Rabbi Lankri, and especially in this field, he's always pushes, ma'oided, to when you learn something, you have to be a professional, you have to know it ad l'maisa, not just learn it, you have to be a musmach on it. And Be'ez Hashem, I also plan, hopefully, to be Mitzara for one day, and together with the others, to become a Moyel. It gives us great pleasure to have the Mor, the Asra Shlita, Rav Lankri, Moyel Mumcha, to give a shir on practical applications and Hilchas Mila. Rabbi Lankri Shlita.
There was a Gvir, the rich man, wanted to know who's going to be masvid him. So he brought... he bought three of the best darshanim rabbonim. First, and he said to them, "Listen, here I am. Before I go, I want to know who's going to do the best hesped. So, we're going to do a trial run." The first guy goes up. He goes on in the store. He's crying. It's sadik. It's a chosid. It's it. The next guy goes up. He's a little more machshavadik. Yeah, and everything he did was calculated. And the third guy gets up, he goes, "Ah, look, he's moving!" He says, "You got the job." Yeah. So, it's very, very interesting. Today's a very special day for me. Oh, this is going on Torah anytime. Hi, Ma. As a Moel, and you travel a lot, there's the Moel jokes. There's a lot of Moel jokes. A lot of the Moel jokes, we can't say, because it's going on Torah any time. But one of the classical questions that people ask a Moel, and I strongly suggest, you don't have to ask this question anymore. They go over to them, they come over to me, they go, "Rabbi Lankri, where's the bris?" "In the same place. You know, it never really changes." So you gotta keep these things into an account that, you know, the status quo is the status quo. It's a special day for me because I didn't even realize, but as I was leaving the house, my wife told me it's the yahrzeit of Manzeda. Oh. Zayda was a very, very special man. He was, I think the guy by his bris, you know, the bris, you say, "Kishem shenichlas lebris, kini karnes letoyro, lechupo, lemaisim toivim." I think the guy had a stutter, and he said, "Kishem shenichlas lebris, kini karnes lechupo, toiro, lemaisim toivim." Why? Because my Zayda was married before Bar Mitzvah, back in the old country. You know, things were different. My Baba was 9 years old, he was 12 years old. Shalom Aleichem, you think Hasidim have a basho? It's like Shalom Aleichem, you want to get married? Okay, no, yeah, whatever. In the old country, it was, "Hi son, yeah, here's your wife." okay, she's coming back from Gan in 2 hours. Yeah, okay, bring her to her house, and that's your date. And they got married, right? They got married, obviously. So my Zayda was a very, very special Yid. He was a very big tzaddik. His day began at Chatzos Laila. Everyone in the old country, Chatzos Laila, got up, used to sit down on a little box, and this Avla Churban Beis HaMikdash. Then he used to go laying Gan Tehillim. Then he had Chavrusis and Shiurim. And by the time he get to work, every day it would be like 9 o'clock. And I used to ask him, Zayda, I didn't say Zayda because he wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Mazeh, you know, Saba. So I said, how do you have koach to do business? He used to smile and say, you could always count money when you're tired. And I tried it. You could be exhausted. You know, all of a sudden, you need to count money. It's a geitzach, it's a gatzavet, you know, it works. What was special about my Zayda and what's so apropos is, Aleinu, when his wife was Nifter, he got remarried 3 months later. Kamuvan in Mishpachas, it turns into a tumul. And I pulled him aside and I said to him, Saba, to Lamdenu, because everything he did was Mechusha, was the Cheshbin. And he wasn't shy to beat me up when I was misbehaving, right? Old school Zaydis. Today, everyone has to be so nice, right? But then it was, we were davening in a marketplace, and I looked out of my sitter, and bing! And I was married with a kid. Bing! You know, she's got one of those. Could you look out of the sitter? Okay. Got it. So now, instead of looking in the sitter, I didn't look out of the sitter. I was looking, is he going to whack me? Here he comes. Right? The game was to dodge the next whack. But that was the Saba Kadisho. So I asked him, Lama, 3 months later, you know, he says, Miyomai, from my entire life, I never wasted Zera Levatola. Miyomai. Right? Now that I'm 70 something, because they never really knew their birthdays. In the old country, you were born either before Pesach or after Pesach. Before Sukkot, after. And if you were born on Hanukkah, so then, I was born on Hanukkah. But otherwise, right, it was, it could be always off a couple of years, a couple of months. It's like, right, if it was a sunny day, they said, yeah, he was born on a sunny day. That's it. There was no birth certificate. I was born. Where, what, who knows? That town, it could move, you know, it's all tents. What's where's your roots? It's moving. Here we go. So that's that. So my Zayda. He was very mock with the entire Sabris, Shemir Sabris, and even in his 70s, he didn't want it to be Nichshol, and immediately remarried a lady with the same name, they even looked alike. I want to shut off my whoever didn't shut off the phones. Okay, now's the time to do that. Alright, so moving right along in the practical applications of Bris Milah, I'm looking for a volunteer. We're not going to go there. The practical applications of Bris Milah, there are quite a few inventions that have come around over the years, and of course they turned into diyunim in halacha. Am I missing a birthday party somewhere? Rav Nochum, am I supposed to be somewhere else? Let me know, because I miss things all the time. No, no, no. No. That's the new system. We have the music system in the. Yeah. A ganz yoga freilach. No, keep it going. It's all good. It's all good. So what I have here. Can the camera? It's an issue. The camera can't move. So we're going to deal with this like this. Does anybody know what this white powder is? Right. Depends on the substance. It's going to be worth a lot of money or nothing. So what I want to share with you is what I've accumulated over the past, I don't know, 20, 30, 20-something years that I've been involved in Mila. And when you're involved in Mila, it's like a certain addiction. Everywhere you go, you watch a guy, he has different hechatinses, he has different shtick. Everybody has something, and you can learn from everybody. Some people you learn not what to do, right? But you're still learning, right? I remember seeing a certain mile, you know? You gotta be kidding. It was a bad idea. I think there's a Maisa with the Satmar Rebbe. Maisa with the Satmar Rebbe, there was a certain moil that... we got some miles. So there was a certain moil that was not really... There was another Rebbe, I don't know his name, because I'm not really from that part of the world. All right, and he was doing a bris, and he was, you know, he was a little shaky. You know? So the Satmar Rebbe was up to him, the race, you know, Ich bin a mile oichet. He says, yeah, nu, adraba, the Rebbe should machen the bris. Why aren't you doing it? Zvalach kenisht. So I can't do the bris. Hint. Just because I'm a mile doesn't mean I have to do the bris. So in Shulchan Aruch, we should say something of halacha, right? In Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Samach Dalit, it says like this, in Sif Beis, a very fascinating Lashon in Mechaber, Bakol Malin, Afilu B'tzror, B'schuchit, B'chol Dav HaKoris. You could make a bris with anything. Chutz M'Bikrumis Shel Kono L'Fishin Shiksamim Nitaz M'Meno. Now there's a certain type of kana, a reed, that if you try to, you'll sharpen it, and let's say you get it to, it's a good blade. The problem with this blade is it's going to have splinters. See, these guys know. So impressed with Nachum. Anyway. So you get splinters. So the second you try to be cut, you chaytech with those things, you know, what's going to happen is you're going to leave a splinter. And it's not going to be geschmack. It's not going to be geschmack. Imagine going to the PA trying to get the splinter out. It's not geschmack. So the halacha says when it comes to a certain type of krum shalkana, that nitozim emenu samim, You can't use it because it's not an option. Oh, umitzvah meramocha lamo bebarzel. Oh, it's a mitzvah meramocha to cut with metal. Doesn't really say what kind of metal, but metal. Bein besakin, bein bemisparayim. It could be whether it's a knife or whether it's a scissors. V'nogu lamul b'sakin. It's Loshin Mechaber. The meaning is to do bris mila with a knife. Okay. Now, in the process of knives, I brought a little show and tell. This is important. Swan Morton. This is called the disposable mile knife. After it's used, it's a fabulous letter opener. Really, it works. It's fantastic. Now, the reason why I like these very much is because the classical mile knife, you need to sharpen it. The last thing you want is when you're going for the cut, hello? And it's like, oh, I forgot to sharpen it. And it's like, and then the kid looks up at you and says, "Hello, what are you doing?" So what you really want is something like this. This stuff, on the touch, you cut right through. So I have different types of Swan Martens. I have the type that you, this doesn't really work. You got to attach the blade to it. You see, here's a blade. You slip it onto this, and it's a double edge. The concept of a cherev shel pipiyos, right, is that you really don't have to. You don't have to look at which side you're going to cut with. Alamila, grab, cut. Whereas if you only had one side that was sharp, and you used the back handle, the kid will look up at you again and say, "Oh." No, he's not going to be happy. Not going to be happy. So you have a cherev shel pipiyos, that's the minig nogu v'sakin. But again, what's the loshin machaber? The loshin machaber is bakol malin. And you can find, tigach tziparet tzror. She found a rock and she's, yeah, shine. So which really brings us to a shaila in the poskim. I don't know the inventor of this concept, but there's something called a mugging clamp. Anybody hear about the mugging clamp? So the mugging clamp, I have a friend of mine, his name is Moshe Yarmish. His Zayde developed the mugging clamp. The mugging clamp is essentially this is it, the mugging clamp. It's just like any other mugging. Just as you insert, yeah, imagine it's there, then you close it like this. When you close it, it grabs it really tight, and you cut. It's you follow the dotted lines. It says on the thing, "Cut here." There are people that made mistakes and cut on the wrong side, which could be very dangerous. So there's a diun in Poiskim whether this mugging clamp is permissible to be used or not permissible to be used. Nafkamina, if you used it, would it create a scenario where the child would need afterwards, when he grows up, hatofas dam bris? Hatofas dam bris means to say, let's say a person's a ger, and he converted, and he did. But when he was a kid at the hospital, they did a circumcision. So where do you do? So now you have to, a ger has to do a milah. So how are you going to cut when there's nothing to cut? So you do hatafa. Shadli is in Paiskim, where do you do the hatafa? And there are opinions on every location. You name it, you name the angle, right? Imagine this is 360 degrees. There are shitas for 360 degrees. Where, what, how, what? Halacha lemaisa, and we're all adults here, right? I'm gonna tell you where the hatafa goes. The hatafa goes, well, so some people say it should go on the atara. For those of you that don't know what the atara is, it's the crown. The crown is the mushroom-like looking object. Right, and then there's the rim. So those that are chalik on that, they say, well, that's where the arla was. The problem with that is that was never part of the mitzvah. Okay, so guess what? So we'll do that. We'll do that tafa below. All right, below the mushroom perimeter. That was also never part of the mitzvah. So where do you do it? So where's that tafa going to go that it could be part of the mitzvah and it was part of the priya or whatnot that is remnants of the bris initially? So there's a certain part on the bottom part of the shaft that where the atara doesn't go, but it's like it's behind on the bottom, right? Let's say this is 12 o'clock, right? So at 6 o'clock von unteren, right? There's not a full atara, right? At that location where it goes up in, and it's like a little mushy it up over there, you have some Ar Priya there, you have some original Arla, and if you do the Hatafa over there, so then you're in the location of where it was a previously Mechuyiv, and...
So if that's Ar Priya, why isn't that an issue?
What?
If that's Ar Priya, why isn't that an issue of Tzitzim
Amakvim? Oh, because it's not on Rav Goyvoy or Rav Hekefoy. The Tzitzim Amakvim that we find in Halacha, that's Ma'akiv the Mila, it has two conditions for it. It has to be either Roif Goivoy, meaning to say you have a strand that goes over the lip of the mushroom on the entire height of the mushroom, three quarters, Roif Goivoy, that's this way, right? Or it's on the bottom of the mushroom, right? And Roif Hekefoy, Roif with the circumference. If it's less than that, then it's not Ma'akev. Nevertheless, the Moilim remove it, right? But this... it's not on the Goivoy, and it's not on the Makif. But that's where you have something that is in the realm of where it would have been part of the Bris. In other words, if you would have trimmed over there even back then, okay. All right. It's part of our Priya, that's remnants of our Priya. Just as a Mila fact, the blood vessel for the Iver is always on the bottom. That's where it is. So, chas v'shalom, you're ever in a situation that you hear that the baby is hemorrhaging, could happen, where they're bleeding a lot, you put pressure on the bottom. On that area where you put pressure, that's the location of where you'd want to make hatofa. Hatofa's dambris. Now, it happens to be there was a Shiloh. There was a Baal Tshuva that came to me with a Shiloh back in the day when I was learning in Kletz, today known as Lakewood, and he was a Baal Tshuva from Chile, and he doesn't know who his Mael was. Chances are, back in the day when he was thus going through his Bris, the Mael was probably just a doctor, maybe Jewish, maybe not Jewish. Shema Shabbos for sure not. So L'chumra, he wanted to do a Hatofas Dambris. So he came to me and he said, well, would I do for him the Hatofa? And it's the Chumrah. So there's the issue of being Chayvul Ba'atzmacha. So he said, dude, can you do it yourself? That was my, would you mind doing it yourself? So he said, you know, I want to be Mahadar. He wanted me to do it. I said, I have an idea. See, part of the problem is, even in Hatofa, according to Chazanish, they don't have to even have blood, because Hoitzas Nefesh Legabe Shabbos is even a black and blue mark. So even if you have even if you do a pinch and the blood gets caught under the skin, it's enough, because that's called Nefilas Nisham. That's called Dam. So you can have a Hatofas Dam Bris even on a Mashu that never even exits the body. That's the same. That's the Halacha Legabe Shabbos. It's also the Din Legabe Mila. So there's this thing called a lance. Anybody know what a lance is? People that have issues with sugar, they always take this thing, click on their finger. So I said, you know what? Let's work this out. I went to the local grocery store. I bought him a lance. I got him some of the shtickelich, you know. I said, go ahead. You're a kosher yid. You could do it. You know. And because it was only a chumrah. If it was a vada hatofa, probably it would have been a different situation. So it's a chumrah, it's a suffix. What is the, go through the trauma of having a bunch of rabbanim, you know, over here, over here. What should we do? Should we scrape? Should we cut? You know, some of them get, they call their wives, they get a shetel pin. Oh, it's a good one. Let me. So you get a sewing machine and scrape it up. It's just, it's more mechubadik. So that was a halacha lemaisa on a matzav of a suffix chil hatafa. Baruch ata Adonai Elohim melech haolam shakom yivarel. All right, so here you have what's called a mug and clamp, and in the poskim you'll find in Igros Moshe Chelek Beis Yoredea Simin Kuf Yutes, the Shiloh was sent, and this tool was used in all of Latin America for tens of thousands of Yidden. And it was also used in Eretz Yisrael, this tool, this mug and clamp. The Shiloh was sent from Panama. His name was Chacham Tzion Levi. Chacham Tzion Levi was a gadol b'Yisrael. He learned in Porat Yosef at the same time as Chacham Avadia Yosef and Chacham Baruch Ben Chaim. They were three good friends. And they each went to different places. One went to Brooklyn, Chacham Baruch, massive Talmud Chacham. Chacham Ben Tzion went to Panama, and they both, all of them, they built Torah in their places. Chacham Tzion Levi got off the ship when he landed in Panama, and he was greeted by the Kahal, and he came off the ship, he was holding on to a shovel, and they asked him, "What are you doing with the shovel?" He said to them, "Where's the shul?" "Well, we have a little piece of land over there." He went there, stuck his shovel into the ground. He says, "Here's going to be a mikvah. Let's start digging." Right? "Oh, Rabbi, mikvah, this is Panama. What do you have that? Mikvah right here." And there was a mikvah, and then there was yeshivas, and there were kollelim. It all started off, it's also in halacha, you don't have tahara, you're not going to build a generation of proper yidden. So he asked the Shaila to Chamor, to Rav Moshe Feinstein, about using a utensil that's this, called a mug and clamp, and this utensil, in the presentation of the Shaila, "Hine bedavar milam b'machshe kazeh she'ena yoytze dam klal." Right? Using a utensil that when you clamp this on, what happens is it cauterizes the blood vessels. Mamish gives it such a kvetch that it's so tight that when you remove it, you have like the whole thing looks kind of funky. It looks, then you have to push it down to, you know, bring it back to life, smack it around. It looks like a Ziploc bag. When you take this off, it's like zip. That's what it looks like. A Ziploc bag. And you have the Atara underneath. You got to push down. So the claim is to use a keli that you have no dam whatsoever. So that really is the deal. In some of the poskim, it's chelik ches, simen chavtes. He goes into multiple reasons of why not to use this utensil, this keli. Part of the reasons are called tsar liyanuka. When it clamps down, it hurts. Tsar liyanuka. It's a nice island. Gosh, not a minute ago, we lost three customers. All right. Unnecessary pain brought upon the child would be a concept in halacha that is that compromises the bris. Not having dam is also part and parcel of the bris. Bavor alayich ve'ere mitboseses b'damayich, would be mivases b'damayich v'yomer lach b'damayich hayi. So now if you have a situation where there's a lack of blood, it's a fault in the etzema bris. Right? So that is the deal. Now, the people that come and debate this, and the reason why it's been used many times based upon this tshuva and Rav Moshe comes out and says, if there's no blood at all, then we have issues. But if there's blood, then we're okay. So tens of thousands of Yidin went through this process. And even the poets can come out and say that they don't need hatafa afterwards. But the classical lashon of machaber is korsin bakol. You can use any kli. So let's just call this a fantastic scissor. It's a scissor. It's a scissor that's very dull and doesn't do a good job at cutting it. Right? That would be the tzad of heter. The tzad of iser is the fact that you don't have blood coming out. Lamaisa garet. I've used this on Arabs. There was a lot of blood, I'm telling you. Yeah. On a Yiddish kid, you want to take it off, you know, like immediately so it doesn't have pain. So how you doing? Let's have a coffee. Yeah, take your time. Yeah, but nevertheless, there's blood. There's blood. So whoever claims that there's no blood at all, I don't know. I've seen blood. In a Shasat Chak, I've seen in the Sefer Abris from Rabbi Pertinsky, his sons are Moelin. I've seen one of his sons, they use this on very small babies. And there are also scenarios where the babies have what's called innies. What's an innie? You know, we know what an innie is in a belly button, right? And we know what an Audi is. It's a car, right? No, but it's also an Audi is when the belly button protrudes externally, right? There are some kids that, you know, you come to the wrists. It's a girl. No, it's a boy. You gotta dig it out, all right? And what happens is, if you start to do the chetech, what happens is, it's like a turtle. Jumps back in. Now, how are you gonna deal with this? You could have it. She's gonna bleed, right? There's going to be issues. There's going to be complications. So I want you to know that I saw a beautiful a guy from Arkehila. He had a preemie, a very young baby that had that type of scenario where it was. You can say it's complicated, and they tried to bandage, and again, bloop. Benched again, and there was how are you going to deal with this? So there's a Moel Mumcha. He's an older Yid today. His name is Rami Kahn. He was the Moel at this bris, and I want to share with you and the world what he did in such a scenario. He took the gauze, he folded it into four. See this, and then he pinched off the corner. Saw that? I just pinched off the corner. Then he opened it up. I got a little hole, right? And he made the gauze like a button on a shirt, and he pushed it down over the atara. He made sure the hole was much smaller than the atara. So like this is an exaggeration in that case, but you can see. And what happens is it locked the atara above. It couldn't go. Whoop. It was every time it went away. Where'd he go? And then you have the bandages falling off and you have blood coming out. Where'd he go? See, he locked this in. It was tight. It was like a button. Like, here, see, I'm pulling my button. It doesn't go away. So this is a trick that I first learned after being a mile for 15, 18 years. And I've used it in certain scenarios where oh my gosh, where's it going? So this is something as you first start off your career in Bris Milah, you know what I'm saying? So this is important. This can help. This is a good trick. I've learned this. The Moelim from London are very, very, very talented. every mile is looking for the type of miracle powder that helps congeal and stop bleeding. So they sell, like in Eretz Yisrael, a little powder for a lot of money. And it's like a stop bleed mechanism. So the Moilim in London figured out what's the active ingredient in that compotion. And it came out to be this thing. Clay koalin. Dishtickle. And so instead of paying $100 for a little powder, they get a whole pound for like $9. Right? But this is something for anyone that's looking into Mila. I learned this from a Moel Mumcha, a dear friend of mine. His name is Aaron David Tsubeli. Oh. And he shared this already on video. Yeah, I just might as well bring Gula to Oilo, you know what I'm saying? This is the McCall. I don't know where he got it exactly, but he told me he got it from the Moilum in London. Clay Koalin. We bought it on Amazon. Yeah, I have a bunch of it in a. Now, what they do is they mix it up with some other yellow powder, an antibacterial powder, but this thing, it's like a clay, it's paste. And when it gets in contact with something wet, it locks it all up. For those of you that have nosebleeds, you can take some of that and, you know, it'll stop the bleeding instantaneously. Yeah. It's a good alibi also if you need one. Moving right along before I get into trouble. Now, there, in the process of Bris Milah, this tool is very, very important. This is called the hemostat. There's a tshuva of Moshe and everyone's samech on it regarding removing the Arla and the Priya Bavasa Achas. Meaning to say, for those of you that didn't figure it out, it's basically you got a shoe and a sock and then you got your foot. Right? Meaning to say, before a person has a bris, there's an outer skin. It all looks like one long thing, like an elbow. Right? And what we're removing is two skins and we're left with the third skin. What we have today is skin number three. Skin number one is actually the extension of our epidermis, whatever that is, it's the outer skin. But underneath, that holds on to the Torah, there's another skin. If any of you would like, what we need to do is shech the chicken. If you shech the chicken, there are three arlas. There's arlas halev, arlas ha'oizen, and arlas ha'ma'or. If you want to experience what the activity of a priya is, where you're removing the priya b'tziporin, the best way to train on that is, after you shech the chicken, you open it up, you take out the heart. The heart is embedded in a skin. Someone holds the heart and you grab it and you peel it down, that skin, it's the exact scenario, because it's arlas alev, it's the skin is wrapped in, the lev is wrapped in. I should have brought a chicken, we should have taken it. Yeah. Next time. All right. But if you want to practice the sensation of how to do a priya b'tzipar, is you grab the skin of on top of the heart and you peel it down. And it's the same sensation because the heart, it also comes to a spitz, right? And then as you're peeling it down, it even gets harder because you have to go through a wider area. So you have to rip it and pull it down, right? Back in the day, it was quite common. It was quite common to do a bris in two stages, to just cut off the arla and then do the priya b'tziporin, right? So much so that is in the Gemara on Shabbos that you have on Shabbos. Can you do a matzav of shnei mitzvahs? Like one, I'll do the ana atun palga mitzvah, ata atun palga mitzvah. Right in the Blaznamila, there's a case where one I guess the mechotanim, they all wanted to take part in the bris. So one was going to be chaytech this, the other one do the priya, and each one is doing palga mitzvah. It happens to be that in Rav Baalim, the Ben Ish Chai, and many, many svarim acherim, they go into a diun in halacha, if they're, just like in Isur, you have a chetzi shir. You have a chetzi shir be'isur, do you have a chetzi shir in kumba aseh? Meaning to say, let's say I don't have anything else but an esrig that's small. Do I take that esrig that's small? If I can't eat matzah on Pesach, and I can only eat a drop, so is there any advantage in eating something that's less than this? So, is there a mitzvah to do a bris milah on chetzi shir? In other words, if I do a chetzi bris, but it happens to be then bris milah, that each part is a mitzvah in itself. But if mal v'loy para, kilo loy mal, so each one is a mitzvah in itself, and therefore the gabi chil Shabbos, it's not an isur chil Shabbos if they're both doing it. Shine. Moving right along. This clamp, and technically this clamp should be no different. What happens is in the process of the bris, you have the aver, and you take a probe and you separate the ora priya, separate, and then afterwards you insert the hemostat, you measure it to the bottom of the atara, you clamp down. And then you pull up, put on the muggin, and you cut. You make the bracha and you cut. Technically, a regular hemostat should be no difference legabe tzar liyanuka than this thing, because this thing clamps down and it hurts, and this thing clamps down and it hurts. So the shaila is mali if you clamp down azoy or you clamp down azoy, right? So. As far as Tsar the Yanuka, there should be no difference. Moyalim use hemostats kiseder. It happens to be, and for this I'd like someone to volunteer, this hemostat is a $200 piece, and this gives no Tsar the Yanuka. Antibi, come here. I'm going to use your hand. Come here. Come here. Sure. Come on. I just need somebody to volunteer. No, Rebbe, give him the... Open your hand like this. Just like this. This is a sensitive part of someone's body, right? Right? This is sensitive. Here, I'm going to put the hemostat here, and I'm going to clamp down. Does that hurt?
No.
No. I'll pay you later. Right? I'm selling these clamps. It doesn't hurt. This is a very, very expensive. Now, it has all the features of what a hemostat does, and it gives no tzar the yanuka. That's why I use only this tool.
It's not the probe?
No, it's not the probe. This is the hemostat. See, after I clamp, I pull up with it. See, I'm a typhus, and then I grab. Mm-hmm. Right. Now... I think you're going to be stuck to this tonight, yeah? There's a...
Done.
There are moilim today, right, that I've watched that are like cowboys. They use nothing. They take the chalef, they take the knife, right? They grab and they cut. No muggings, no probing, no nothing. One of the that I saw do this, his name is Rabbi Shane from Crown Heights, and the guy is an artist. Shane Kamoyo. He sculptures the whole thing. But then he already established the standard that you could do a bris milah without any muggings and without anything. And I personally feel, right, that. You ever go to a bris? You know how many people are standing over the moil? Right? He couldn't scratch his nose if he wanted because there's no room. Right? What if he's taking it and he's about to cut and someone hits his elbow? If there's no mug in, we're in trouble. We're in trouble. Unnecessary risks. Unnecessary. Use a mug in. Prepare properly. Now, even in the world of mug ins, there are different mug ins. In the proper muggings, There's no shear for this, but there are different brands and there are different claims by different hanhagas. And what needs to be the width between? See how this one is much wider. There's an organization called Bris Kaidish where they use very wide muggins because again they're concerned of Tsar Liyanuka. These are classical muggins. I happen to like them very much. Obviously, you want to take one with a wider opening for a larger child and one for a smaller opening for a smaller child. What I like to do also is before I insert to minimize the pain, is I like to put a little Vaseline or Neosporin. I learned this from mechanics. Like if you ever want to get a hose onto the radiator, it like doesn't really go. It's like a fight. But if you put a little grease, it just slides right in. Right? So here you go. If you want to put skin through metal, it just does. It jams up and it can be very painful. But if you grease it a little bit, it just slides right in. So that I would recommend. Those muggins, I got them from Altsetter from Lakewood. Fantastic. He has also great probes, different sizes. Altsetter. Okay. In regards from the Chulas of Moshe, in the event that there is no dam at all, it would be halalachic issue. Right? I've seen blood. Now, there's no gather of how much blood is blood. So I would definitely say that b'dieved, for all the people that went through that process, yeah. Going forward, so I was telling you there, Rabbi Pertinsky did this brisim in front of Yaakov Kamenetsky, and he pulled out the mugging clamp, and he, I said to him, "What are you doing?" He says, "My father did brisim with the clamp, and Rav Yaakov was the sandik, and Rav Yaakov obviously was well aware of the halachic ramifications, and he explained to him that there were certain circumstances that he allowed it, and Shon, Rav Yaakov said, go ahead, do what you got to do." That's what I heard from Sefer Briss's son. While he was using a clamp on a very small child, there were twins. So it seems to be that there are poskim that were moderate under certain conditions when it's appropriate. What exactly are those conditions? I have a good theory on what they are. I have an idea what they are. But I would say contact the Pratinsky family to get specific masair on how they had it. According to Tzitz Eliezer, the Gamco, the mugging clamp, these types of muggings, excessive tsar liyunuka, the lack of blood, all these go into the cheshbon to not allow it to be used. Shine. Alright, let's... I was telling Rav Nochum a little bit in concern to the different tools that you use in order to make the bris appropriate. I have different color bottles. I stole it from my daughter. It's in Ghan. But there's a system to the madness. Okay, you want to spray because you constantly want to clean yourself, right? So I color coded it. The silver is alcohol. The red is peroxide. The blue is water. Make sense? Yeah. Right. So now the peroxide. This, you know, science one day was all for peroxide, then they came out against peroxide. It happens to be peroxide is a better germ killer. And peroxide also kills mold and other types of contaminants much better than alcohol. I mean, alcohol has its advantages, but it has limitations. Peroxide is much more. But the problem with peroxide is it also kills good cells. And because it kills good cells, it's less preferred. Okay? Speak to your local doctor, see what you want to use. I think to take your utensils and hit it up with peroxide beforehand and have it dry shouldn't be a big deal, and then you can hit it with the alcohol. There's a in the Seder Abris, there's for many years I never used the system of wrapping up the child. Right there, some people turned it into a Akedas Yitzchak type of thing. I don't know. Last I remember, the Akedas Yitzchak was they cut him somewhere else. No, it was not. You know, that's Akedas. I don't know. It's just like manufactured. I think the wrapping of the baby helps very much in the scenario where the sandak is a person that can't cooperate. They're going to have a Zaydid that's in his 90s and he's just there. Or I've had times where the Sandak was there and like they're calling Hatzalah because the Sandak's out. You know what I'm saying? Dude, you can't drop the ball on me. I'm in the middle of... It's like you have a situation where the Sandak could really mess up. Right? And sometimes they freeze. They just. I always take the sandak and I train them beforehand. I say, okay, make believe this is the legs. You put your hands like a ring around. There's no need to squeeze. All right, but for some reason, like they associate squeezing as holding tight is gonna help the situation. And many of those times when that happens, the baby's already crying before. I didn't even take off the diaper. And you can tell the squeeze when the knuckles are white. It's like those people that drive and you see white knuckles. They're not making a left turn forever. They're going around the world before they turn that thing. Right? It's so you got to make sure the sandik can deal with it. Because it could be a disaster. So you gotta calm the son. You gotta give him therapy. You know, it's gonna be good. It's gonna be good. Yeah. And just, but after sometimes you want to call up in advance. Who's the son? Has he ever done it before? Yeah. No. Good. Okay, I'm wrapping it up. All right. You bring the gauze. You wrap up the legs, and. And it's amazing because now you don't have a moving target. You know? Sometimes the pillow slips out underneath and you're like, and you can't, hello, guys, this is not good. This is not good. Right? So I always use my tools. I bring it in a box. I put the guy's feet underneath. Let's see the guy's teeny. The guy's teeny. It's like tying your shoelaces. It's like, it's terrible. You gotta. Shul should have a kisa shel Elio. And I understand they put the big benches, these wide benches, in case the guy's huge. You know what I'm saying? Have a triple there, right? It's a universal bench. Well, what are you gonna do? You know what I'm saying? But what you really need is to be a little bit higher, right? And then the legs can come up. You can deal with it. So you got to be very. You guys are going to become moiled. You got to be selective. You got to look at the sandik and say, okay, yeah. And by the way, sometimes the guy could be all gruff and tough, and the drop of blood comes out, then boom, he's down. So you bring with you a little smelling salt. You always have them wash. You always. Germ-free environment, always wash. you spray them again, right? Anyone that's looking, spray them. spray them. I'm very fond of not having kids. Not having kids, around. These little kids, they like they want to, I don't know what's going on. Right? You know, they run if you put them on the tzaddik's lap. It's an eight, so you pick them up. They start screaming and kicking. No, we'll be here for 2 minutes. Right? They run. Or the mother comes running. One of the two. It's best preferred, like, all the preparations that you're going to do, to wrap the kid, whatever. You don't want the grandmothers or the mother present, because it can cause a reaction that hurts. You know, like you can get clocked by a grandmother. It hurts. What? Boom! Yeah. And it can be very dangerous. Call you when it's all ready. If they have a nurse, sometimes the nurses are fantastic. They're really good. They can change diapers. Where I come, the men don't change diapers, but that's why it's good to have a nurse. Diaper change. Oh, all right. I wanted to offer for any of the guys that want to take this to the next level. If you want to practice, I was telling Rav Nochum, we do on chicken wings. We use them afterwards. We barbecue them, but they're just going to be missing their elbows. That's it. Right? They're very good, very tasty. And we don't use alcohol. We set up all the equipment. The most important thing of becoming used to doing the procedures of a bris milah is having all your equipment in order. If your equipment's in order, right, then you're in a mindset like, okay, I'm under pressure. What am I looking for? I don't know. What am I up to? No, wrong thing. No. I don't have to think. I just go grab the next thing. And I grab the next thing. If you're a sudder, all right, then I think that's the way surgery works. No, like they know what they need. Or they ask the nurse, what do you think I should use next? I think we should do one of those. So this guy told me a masa, very interesting masa, who's on the gurney going into surgery. Very, very special masa. He's in the gurney going into surgery, and he looks up to the nurse and says to the nurse, what are my odds? Says 100%. 100%, but it's the most challenging, difficult surgery. 100%. So how do you know? He says, well, statistics say that 9 out of 10 don't make it, and you're number 10 for today. The other 9 didn't make it, so you're going to be fine. Right? Right? So that's... So I want to give an open invitation to everybody. If you want to get used to the hergel, the umin yad of the process, the first thing is having the seder of what takes place. You set up the tools. It's not expensive. It's not expensive. And we're in the base medrash or Chaim and Shiner. I'm sure we can get sponsors for something. So if we have a shear and there's no cake, we could put it towards tools. You know what I'm saying? All right, we can get... So for anyone that really wants to take this to the next level, it would be my pleasure to sit with you and to show you each and every step of how it's done, and get some chicken wings before the 9 days, right? And we'll show each and every step, how to probe, how to separate, how to lift the hemostat and eventually cut. And it could be a beautiful experience. And for those of you that want to pursue this and would like to ask me questions, if anyone has any questions right now, this is what I call a kol. No one has any more kashas. Got it, klar. Night seder, boom, bang it out, learned, they know it all. This is not. It didn't hurt, no, but there are other types of hemostats that are exceptionally painful. This machine, you can buy these from India for like $3, and use that. It'll break in the middle, and it'll also hurt very, very, very much. This one is made from a company called Miltox, M-I-L-T-O-X, 24-3220. I should write that down. What do they call that thing for kids? Pediatrician? No. What? Pediatric surgical hemostat. Very, very expensive, and it's painless. See, I'll even illustrate. Ha! Nothing. See? Thank you for inviting me. It should be Yilui Nishmas, Ma'azedah, Zetzadik, and in Gan Eden, I'm sure they were watching this, I'm sure they were having a good time, right? Ma'azedah was looking down and saying, ah, my Einikel, what's he saying in that language? Who speaks this? Oy vey, he said Yiddish Vertlach. Oy, it's going to be good. Shkoyach, thank you very much. Good night.